Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Afai. A bomb explosion has hit the National Security Headquarters in the capital, Damascus. As a result, it claimed the life of Syrian Defense Minister General Dawood Rajiha and a brother-in-law of the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, General Asif Shawkat, as well as a senior security official. The blast also injured the Interior Minister. That is the latest in Syria's situation as violence plagues the capital. This, as the international community will be voting at the UN on two draft resolutions, one Western-backed and one from Russia. Syria is our focus in this edition of the News Analysis.
One more deadly day in Syria. Defense Minister Dawood Rajiha, his deputy Asif Shawkat, and a senior security official are the latest victims of more than 16 months of unrest. They were killed after a blast hit the National Security Building in a central Rada district.
From my own understanding, if I link this to such a sophisticated attack happening in Beirut, assassinating Hariri, and at the time there is the fingerprint of Mossad and such CIA-linked agents.
General Rajiha was appointed defense minister when unrest gripped Syria last year. Rajiha, a Greek Orthodox Christian, was also the deputy army chief and deputy head of the Council of Ministers. Terrorist attacks against Syrian government installations and civilians have sharply risen in recent months. The latest attack comes just days after militant groups issued a threatening warning to government forces and officials: switch your side or face assassination.
This focus on dismantling and harming the morale of the people and of the leadership and of the army.
The new Syrian defense minister, General Fahd Jassim al-Fraj, says Damascus is ready to foil all the terror plots. Al-Fraj accuses Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya TV channels of spreading blatant lies in order to destabilize Syria. On the international level, the US and Russia remain divided. Washington and its Western allies continue to put pressure on Moscow to try and push Syrian President Bashar al-Assad out of power, but Russia's not budging. Instead, it accuses the West of inciting the Syrian opposition. It's also called for the punishment of those behind the latest terror attack in Damascus.
The independent regime that Washington does not control is a regime that Washington wants replaced by a puppet state. And that's the name of the game in Syria. That's what's going on. And these insurgents, they're recruited terrorists. We can give them any name that you like. A lot of Al-Qaeda involved.
Since March last year, Syria has seized weapons, including rockets and anti-tank missiles, smuggled into the country from Lebanon and Turkey. But who's financing the project? Syria says Saudi Arabia and Qatar, with the help of Western and Israeli spy agencies. The UN says thousands have been killed in the unrest. The opposition blames the government for the killings. But Damascus says many of those who've lost their lives were civilians and security forces killed by armed gangs.
In all of the wars, direct or proxy wars, that America gets involved with, every single one of them, it's always claimed that civilian great care is taken.
Let me introduce our guest, author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley joins us from Washington. From the Syrian Social Club, Shahrukh Kadour joins us from London. And director of the Center for Middle East Studies, Hisham Jaber, joins us from Beirut. I'd like to welcome all our guests. Let me first start with you, Hisham Jaber. What do you make of this bombing at the National Security Headquarters, which has claimed the life of Syria's defense minister and his deputy?
Of course, we cannot deny, and no one can deny, that it's a very important terrorism operation. But it's not the first one, and nor the last one. And the important in this operation today against the headquarters of the National Security Building, the target first, and the victims who are, for example, four or five pillars of the Syrian regime, starting by General Dawood Rajiha Rahimullah, and the others, Asif Shawkat and General Mohammed Shaar, the Minister of Interior, and also we heard that General Hisham Bakhtiar, the head of the intelligence, is seriously injured. Okay, but doesn't mean the regime Syrian regime, like many satellites today, believed or tried to say that it's the beginning for this regime to be collapsed. I don't think any terrorism operation can let a regime like the Syrian one be collapsed. The Syrian regime still have a lot of strong assets, like the armed forces, which still united. Despite what they said about defection, many observers believe that the number of the officers who did defect from the army are not more than 3% of the officers in the Syrian armed forces. As the armed forces in Syria still have 12 divisions. We are talking about 15,000 in every division. The Syrian army still have about 12 or 10 special forces brigades, 5 brigades of special forces, and 5 other brigades of commandos, and so on and so. So the Syrian regime still have assets. Of course, this operation is absolutely different than the fighting inside the streets in some quarters inside Damascus. Of course, the fighting inside Damascus is important, is difficult for the armed forces to deal with it by tanks, by artillery, like if it's outside of the city or outside of the capital. But Syria still can deal with those insurgents by special forces and commandos. But the army cannot, not only in Syria and anywhere, cannot face this kind of suicide operations. We heard that the so-called Free Syrian Army claimed to be behind this operation. I do not believe this, because this kind of operation usually and most of the time is signed by Islamic extremistic group like Al-Qaeda. I said Al-Qaeda or similar or equivalent, because Al-Qaeda is not only one single organization which receive orders from up to down. No, every armed group, Islamic armed group who believes in the Al-Qaeda, who became Al-Qaeda, became kind of tooth or belief or school, can be behind such operations. Uh-huh. This operation has been prepared for a long time, and it's a very important breakthrough in the security. The army is not responsible, the army is not affected, but the intelligence services is concerned about this. It must, for example, to minimize the damage or to minimize this kind of operation, must be attentive and awake to stop this kind of operation, which right. will not stop.
Right. Okay. We're going to expand more on some of the points there, but one of them I'd like to pick up on, and I'd like to ask you, Ashur Khadur, is the media and how it's been an all-out assault of certain media, so much so the defense minister, the new one, came out on TV and blasted the two of them, Al Arabiya and Al Jazeera. And how much of an effect are they trying to do in terms of those two channels, but other media as well? When it comes to Damascus, it seems like this all-out assault is trying to take away the popular support that exists in the capital, Damascus, accompany it by the media assault, which is rumors of defections and how this is it and this is the beginning of the end, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you've been following developments. What are your observations?
Well, it's been obvious from the very beginning that the media has been complicit in the lies and in the terrorism that has been taking place. Obviously, Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya have been fabricating and exaggerating events from the very beginning, and today has been no exception whatsoever. When I had a look at Al Arabiya, they mentioned that Asif Shawkat was Bashar Assad's brother-in-law. They made no mention that he was the deputy defense minister at all. And to see Arab media as well as Western media celebrating side by side with Israel's Channel 2 and Channel 10, who are glorifying the FSA's murderous acts, is a very sad day indeed. Why should the Arabs, why are the Arabs hand in hand celebrating with the Israelis on a day where a sovereign nation's ministry minister, sorry, has been killed and murdered. This is an act of war, and the media is doing nothing to help the Syrian people and to portray their love for their country. A few hours ago, the Syrian news channels online were actually being cut off. So you can start to see that they're trying to cut out the voices of the Syrian people who still support their government and still support their country. We essentially don't have a voice right now, even though there are millions flooding the streets saying that we want emergency law back, that we want to declare war on these people that have brought instability to our country. But no, it's the FSA, the opposition, that are being given the majority voices. And the media has just played a big role in that. And they want to perpetuate the image that Syria is in trouble and is in need, because it will intensify their campaign for intervention, which obviously we see before every UNSC meeting, a major event happens, in the hope that the UN or the Arab League will try to push through intervention like they did with Libya. But Syrians are determined that this will not happen. And even though our voices are being cut off in many different ways, we are persistent. The new defense minister and the information minister today said that regardless of their actions, we are still standing by our country. And if they think that what they did today will have an impact, then they are mistaken. This has only just begun.
Okay, Webster Griffin Tarpley, this has only just begun is perhaps a turning point, calculated, and tell us if this calculation by the West, by some Arab governments, such as from Saudi Arabia and Qatar, not to mention Turkey, is to do what happened in the capital, knowing that this is a populated, obviously, capital, and there's going to be consequences in terms of civilian casualties at a much higher pace than perhaps in some of the countrysides. Do they want that to happen in order for them to make their point clear that there needs to be intervention?
Well, we heard from Hillary Clinton about a week ago that Syria was going to be subject to a catastrophic assault leading to the smashing of the Syrian state. So now we see the pro-NATO forces, the NATO death squads, delivering on that. I would stress the role of NATO and indeed of the CIA, because we know the press today here, the Wall Street Journal, reminds us that the CIA is running communications coordination C-cubed for the Free Syrian Army, for the death squad. So I think an operation of this complexity would be very hard for even al-Qaeda fighters to do. They've got to be essentially guided by maybe French or British or U.S. Special Forces officers. But I would stress the communications and media angle. We have been aware for about a month, since it was written up by Thierry Meyssan on the Voltaire website, there has been a plan coordinated by the Obama White House, and in particular by somebody called Ben Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. And Ben Rhodes has developed a way to create the illusion that the Syrian Ba'ath Party government, the Assad regime, is in the process of collapsing, even though this is not true, as the other speakers have pointed out. And the idea of this is, first of all, to seize control of Nilesat and Arabsat, and it sounds like that is now happening. If the Syrian state television, Adunia, Sham, and some others have been thrown off the air, that would indicate that this plan is now entering a new stage. It also requires Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya to go into a full brainwash, big lie, Goebbels mode, something way beyond what they usually do. Something that reminds us of what happened around August 20th last year in Tripoli, Libya, when we had Operation Mermaid Dawn, and we were treated to scenes supposedly happening in the Green Square of Tripoli that were actually happening on a Hollywood soundstage in Doha or other places in Qatar or Saudi Arabia. Now, this operation, let's call it the Ben Rhodes operation. I'm sure there's a NATO code name. Maybe we'll find that out. But Operation Ben Rhodes, according to my count, has been operational since about Sunday morning. It's been going for 72 to 96 hours now. And it started when the Free Syrian Army said that they were going to start the last battle for Damascus. Now, they really don't have this capability. But what they try to do is arrange some high-profile defections, have some high-profile terrorist attacks of the type that we've seen that has caused the victims among these officials, and then also have some high-profile military actions in the streets of Damascus. We're seeing this morning Al Jazeera broadcasting direct sort of handheld cameras from the streets of Damascus, allegedly. We don't know if it's true. Probably not true. Probably someplace else. But to somehow cook that all together to create the illusion of a regime that is collapsing, whereas it's not. So the only way this kind of attack, this brainwashing strategy can succeed is if people are stupid and gullible enough to believe Al Jazeera, Al Arabiya, and the other media outlets that are grouped around them. I would stress that the U.S. media this morning has not yet committed itself to this. The television coverage of the Syrian events has been minimal, at least up until the time I left my house. So it's still an open question, but I think it's very premature to say that this is now the decisive battle for Damascus. I don't think it is. I think that is the illusion that Al Jazeera and Al-Arabiya are trying to create. But it all goes back to Ben Rhodes in the Obama White House and the communication strategy that he is deploying. It's a big lie. It's mass brainwashing. People shouldn't believe it. Go on Twitter and denounce it as a fraud, because that's what it is.
Okay, Hisham Jaber, let's pick up on what Webster Griffin Tarpley said, that this last effort for Damascus and the illusion that's being played that the regime, as they want to call it, is falling apart, is not the case, given your expertise in what Assad and his security forces have in numbers, in equipment, and how easy it is for them to regroup based on what happened today and to go after this FSA, whoever they are, whatever compromises the FSA to be.
Yeah, first of all, we have to clarify that the Syrian armed forces are still united, at least in 90%. We did not see any unity in the Syrian army did defect, even a small company. Of course, many officers who represent 2 or 3% of the number of the officers in the army, they left, and they went some of them outside of the country, some to the Turkey, and some they did join the so-called Free Syrian Army. But the armed forces in Syria are still strong, as we said, and still united for many reasons. Second, what we have like terrorism operation, of course, the terrorism operation, as we learned, that has a direct and physical target, like a building, like a certain person. But behind this, the target, most important target, is to create a non-security situation in the country and create a climate of fear, especially among the high-ranking pillars or officials in the regime, to tell them that we can arrive. It was very important, this breakthrough, in my opinion. But as we said, I don't think this operation, which will not be, as we said, the last one, will continue, will have that impact beside the psychological impact, as we said. But I think the Syrian armed forces are prepared and have some kind of humanity. And like your guest said, of course, the psychological operation and brainwashing and what we're talking today in many satellites, they are trying to say that the Syrian regime will collapse very soon. I don't think so. And I have been asked a very stupid question today and very important satellite. They asked me, when do you believe that the regime and the government regime of Bashar al-Assad will leave the capital? I said, don't hope. Don't have that hope. Yeah, it's not going to be in the near future. at least, and the situation in Syria will continue like it is, and bloodshed, of course, and blood shower, if they don't find any peaceful solution for the problem and the crisis in Syria. And I don't think they are looking to find a peaceful solution. We are talking about the democracy. Of course, we have statistics that more than 40% in the population in Syria, they do support the regime. They don't want change this regime with reform or without reform. And 40% are against the regime. They are indoctrinated and they are under the propaganda. They don't want this regime. But the most important is that 20% of the population in Syria, they want the regime with reform, they want security, they don't want that Syria will go into a civil war. That's right. The most important
point. Okay, since we're running quickly out of time, I'd like to get your opinion, Shura Kadour, also, since we're talking about the future, where this is headed to, how do you see things developing from this point on?
If Syria doesn't retaliate and if we don't act against this blatant act of war, then there will be no hope for us because it will keep escalating and it will get so bad that obviously it will look like Damascus has fallen when Damascus has not fallen. We need to maintain the solidarity within our country, which is obviously being maintained. But at the same time, we need to show them that, no, we are still a sovereign state. We are a state that will not bend over to imperialist and Zionist needs and that we will retaliate. Otherwise, everything will escalate. Ever since the UN observers have come in, we as a nation have not benefited. It has only been for the benefit of the opposition. How many massacres have taken place while the UN observers have been present in Syria and nothing has happened? It's
right.
All
and
a
now
facade.
I'd like to bring in Webster Griffin Tarpley. I do apologize for lack of time. Webster Griffin Tarpley, you tell us, is this the last real push by so-called FSA, or are we going to see more? Or is this the end if they turn out to lose against the government and their security apparatus by purging them out of Damascus?
Well, I think the perspective is, unfortunately, for the moment, a continuation of a low-intensity conflict with the media war really playing a very important part of it. I think we have to look now to the UN Security Council this afternoon, assuming that Russia and China hang tough and veto the plan for an attack by NATO, which is being proposed by the British this time around, with the U.S. and France and the rest of them backing it, then what happens after that? We just had the Turkish Prime Minister meeting with Putin in Moscow today. I think Putin is very disappointed, very unhappy about these events. About a week ago, there was an idea going around that the U.S. had offered Russia some kind of a deal, something in the nature of a new Yalta. And under that deal, Syria would be recognized as belonging to the Russian-Chinese sphere, not to the U.S. sphere, and that the U.S. and NATO would butt out. At the time, I thought this was an illusion. I think it has turned out to be an illusion. The U.S. will not respect that that division. So I think you have to look for counter moves elsewhere in the world, and it may come as quite a surprise. But I think, unfortunately, the U.S. ruling class, as typified by somebody like Hillary Clinton, is determined to continue to engage in blackmail, as the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov said. So I'm afraid that's the perspective.
Thank you very much. Author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley there from Washington. Also like to thank Shuruk Khadour from the Syrian Social Club, talking to us from London, and Director of Center for Middle East Studies, Hisham Jaber. Thank you so much from Beirut. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any comments or suggestions, newsroom at presstv.ir. That's our email address, the old-fashioned way. From Mikhail Vitakhvayi and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.